is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Colonel Tom McKinney, and we're going to be talking with him about a treatise he's written on the Islamic religion and the Islamic threat to Western culture. Colonel McKinney, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell us, what is this called? Is it called Blood on the Sword?
Yeah, the pamphlet, is titled Blood on the Sword, and the subtitle is Islam and the Quran versus Christianity and the Bible.
Well, of course, the president keeps telling us that Islam is a peaceful religion, and we're not at war with Islam. We're just at war with the Islamic terrorists, and of course, he's always having the clerics there coming to pray, you know, in the White House and praying in the National Cathedral, and of course, this is all good public relations. But is Islam as a religion? Is it a peaceful religion?
Oh, it's fundamentally a violent religion, and I believe that Islam, militant Islam, is the greatest threat to liberty today.
Well, of course, does every Muslim person embrace all the militant or hostile actions or hostile parts of the religion?
Oh, no. Like virtually any religious group, there are variations, and some don't take it very seriously, and it's more of a cultural thing with them than it is a religious matter. But if they're doctrinally sound, if they are obeying the Quran, if they're following the teachings of Muhammad, then it is definitely, basically, fundamentally, and in practice, a violent religion.
All right. Well, of course, Christ told us to turn the other cheek and to avoid conflict if you possibly could. Not that you would always avoid conflict, but certainly you would not go out and try to engender a conflict with an enemy at all.
Of course not.
But what does the Quran actually advocate? Because you see, most Americans are never taught this, and they're doing a great job through the propaganda machine here in the United States to try to convince us that Islamic is a peaceful religion. And after all, if the president says that, it's got to be true. But is it true? What does it really say in the Quran about living in peace with the Christians and the Jews?
There are peaceful Muslims, of course, as individuals, and there are even relatively peaceful groups, doctrinal groups within Islam. But, as I said before, if they are going to be obedient to the Quran and to the teachings of Muhammad, then every Muslim is charged with converting every non-Muslim or putting those who refuse to be converted to death.
But of course, we proselytize the Christian religion. We try to bring people to accept Christianity. What's the difference?
we
try to do it with the Bible, and they try to do it with the sword.
We do it because we love them, and they do it because they are driven to it or required to do it. We have found the key to life. We have found the gift of everlasting life. We have found the gift of reconciliation with God, and we are charged to share that with everyone who doesn't have it. And that's what the Great Commission is, and it's a wonderful thing to do. And in so doing, we are loving the lost and offering them what they need but don't have and can't find in any other way. Islam, on the other hand, is very much like militant fascism or militant communism. It simply is a move, a program to compel people to comply. In fact, the word Islam means those who submit, not those who love and embrace the truth of God, but those who simply bow the knee and bow the head and submit.
And of course, we try to convert with the word, and they try to convert with the sword. In fact, aren't there places in the Bible where they talk about killing those who will not go along with this?
In the Quran.
I should say in the Quran.
Sure. In fact, to my knowledge, no group, it's difficult for me to come up with the right words this time of day, Dr. Stan, but no culture, no civilization, no city, no county, no neighborhood, and perhaps no individual, with rare exceptions, has ever been converted to Islam by argument or reason, only by force.
And of course, I think that they just don't teach the history today. But of course, Islam was constantly at war with Christianity from the time it was established by Muhammad in the 600s until really the last century. But, you know, they had taken most of Spain. They were driven out in 1492. Then they moved into the Balkans. They would have taken all of Europe had it not been for the Battle of Vienna in 1682. If the Christians hadn't held there, why would all be speaking Arabic?
But they were stopped at the Danube.
Right.
That was their high watermark, so to speak. Yes, we would all be speaking Arabic. And incidentally, prayer is an interesting thing to contrast with Islamic prayer and Christian prayer. In Islam, the thought of praying in a personal way to a personal God, prayers of thanksgiving, prayers of love and adoration, prayers of, I can't think of the word again, Dr. Monteith. At any rate, to make requests before God and to thank Him and to intercede for others, this is completely foreign to the Islamic mind and completely foreign to the teachings of the Quran.
All right, we're going to have to interrupt you there. We'll come back as soon as we get through this break here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Colonel Tom McKinney, and we're talking about his pamphlet, Blood on the Sword.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
All right, and this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention that if you haven't made any preparations for what lies ahead, give it some serious consideration. Now, I hope nothing's going to happen, but I will tell you that our leaders are telling us there's going to be terrorist attacks on America. There's going to be biological attacks. There's going to be chemical attacks. There may even be nuclear attacks. What preparations have you made? How long could you survive if there really were an attack here? Well, why don't you call 1-800-532-2202? That's 1-800-453-2202. That's Ready Reserve Foods, and of course they have a checklist on the things that you should have ready in case there were some sort of an emergency. And of course they'll send you along a catalog on their food products, and we have used them in the past. They are actually the factory that produces the food that many of the other distributors actually put out, the preserved food. They last 12, 14 years sitting on a shelf without refrigeration. So why don't you give them a call there? The number is 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202, Ready Reserve Foods.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Colonel Tom McKinney. We're talking about his pamphlet on Blood on the Sword. How can people get your pamphlet, or is it up on the website?
Oh, it's on the website, and they can reach us that way, or they can call the office, or they can email the office.
All right. Well, how can they call the office? How can they email the office?
All right. The email address for the office is simple. It is WFLM, as in Words for Living Ministries, WFLM at apex, APEX, .net. And for those who may be wanting to write that down, I'll repeat it. The email address is WFLM, Words for Living Ministries, WFLM at apex, APEX, .net. The website address is Words for Living, M-I-N, run together, Words for Living, M-I-N, .org. And, of course, you must put www. dot before that.
All right, fine. And the telephone number?
The telephone number. The area code here is 270, and the number 965-5060.
All right, there's 270-965-5060. And one of the real tragedies is that, you know, this radical form of Islam had pretty well been eliminated. It really wasn't a major factor within the Islamic world. Certainly the Quran was there, but most Muslims were living peacefully with their neighbors until recently, starting really after we toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power and his radical form of Islam, and we brought it to power, and then we began financing the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and we recruited Muslims from all throughout the world to come to Afghanistan to be indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam with our help and the help of financing and the help of the Pakistanis and the Saudis, so that they would be willing to fight the Soviets in a religious war. This was really truly a religious war. And when they won it, when the Soviets were driven out, why these Muslims felt that now, of course, Allah was on their side. He was going to give them victory, and they were going to establish this world Muslim system. And they were set out all across the world to begin to push this in their own individual homes. Well, then once we, of course, get into this the situation as far as Afghanistan, the war with Afghanistan, and what happened on September 11th of last year was a terrible thing. But why go to war with Afghanistan when we've been financing the Taliban in Afghanistan from 1994, when the Taliban, were organized and we financed them all the way up through everything they were doing? And the only disagreement we had was they wouldn't let us build a pipeline, an oil pipeline across their country. They had even offered to turn over Osama bin Laden in 1997 to the Saudi Arabians, and the Saudis wouldn't take them, even though Osama bin Laden was supposedly the arch villain. And for the reference on that, the book Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America, written by Josef Podansky, who's director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Non-Conventional Warfare. And so, but we go to war with Afghanistan, and of course this inflames the passions of the Islamic people throughout the world. Because now there are crusaders back in the Holy Land, and we've got our troops stationed in Saudi Arabia, and it's sort of like poking a stick in the eye of a rattlesnake. I mean, he's going to strike at you. And now we find more and more of the radical Islam taking over the whole Islamic world. And I think that we should be very concerned about that. And everything we do inflames this Islamic furor. Are you concerned about that, Colonel?
You know, Dr. Stan, I haven't thought of it in that way, in the sense that we have provoked a great deal of this, let alone why, what underlies that provocation. I have dwelt mostly on Islam itself, what it is, where it came from, and what it means and what it potentially means as a threat to us. Because if the quote radical quote Muslims, the fundamentalists, the zealots, if they do gain control, or whenever they gain control in a country or in part of a country, then it is the basic teachings of the Quran are followed and put into practice, and that includes forced conversion or killing. You either bow your knee to Muhammad and make the famous confession that there is only one God, and it's Allah, and his prophet is Muhammad. In a sense, very real sense, denying Jesus and the God of the Bible. Or off comes your head. It's as simple as that.
And I think that's very hard for Christians to imagine that this thing could go on, and yet it really has gone on, and it does go on today in the violent Islamic countries. In fact,
how else can you explain the unthinkable brutality, murders, burnings, tortures, people sawn asunder and buried alive in Indonesia? It's not all over Indonesia. It's not in the capital city. It's out in the outlying islands where these radical fundamentalists are in control. And they burn Christians alive there.
I think it was, somewhere, 10 years or so ago, they killed 250,000 Catholics there. And not a peep out of anybody. Totally blacked out here in the West. Well, now, of course, why don't you perhaps just cover briefly the history of the Muslim religion? Because basically they controlled, all of North Africa and all of the Middle East. And as we said earlier, they had actually invaded the Balkans. They were right at the gates of Vienna. They were really one of the most powerful forces in the world for many years, weren't they?
Oh, yes. The most, I would say. In fact, when their advance into Western Europe was stopped in Spain at the Battle of Granada, it was the victory, it was in kind of celebration of that victory over the Muslims, which turned the tide and began to force them back out of Europe, that part of Europe. It was what caused apparently Ferdinand and Isabella to be willing to fund
Christopher Columbus, right?
Columbus's first voyages,
Well, let's go to Bart, who's calling in from Carmel. Hi, Bart, your question or comment?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you so much for this program, and thank you, sir, for sharing this information with us. I know there are people that might call what you have to say hate speech, but I don't sense any hate coming from you whatsoever.
No.
The question I have is the question I think that might be on the minds of many people, which is this. When this war gets started in Iraq, what do you think may happen in our cities of our country? Do you believe it is possible that there may actually be more attacks like the ones we saw on September 11th? And if so, what form do you think they may come in? And I'll take my answer on the air.
Yes.
Thank you.
I won't attempt to speak for Dr. Monteith, but I'll say for myself, absolutely, I believe it would trigger sporadic, at least, terrorist attacks across the nation, because there are so many of these operational cells of Islamic terrorists who really don't fear death at all. In fact, they look forward to it if they can die in compliance with the Quran and go to Muslim paradise, because it's much better than what they have here on earth by their standards. I think there would be at least scattered across the nation acts of Islamic terrorism, retaliation.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Colonel, and this is why.
And those groups are not under any kind of unified command. They're nutty. I mean, they're madmen. They're they're demonized, and I think in a very real sense, and extremely dangerous, and answering to no one in many cases except their local leadership.
And of course, in Israel, where they have probably 100 times greater security than we have here in the United States, where their borders are sealed, where there are people on the alert all the time, they still have these fanatical
yes.
suicide bombers and killing. There's almost somebody's killed almost every day over there by the suicide bombers, and people don't understand that they are heroes to the Muslim world. And if you are a Muslim who wants to get along and live in peace with the Israelis, they'll kill the Muslims.
Yes,
I mean,
they
this
do.
Is the tragic thing.
They do that for sure.
And they have a whole different, they have a different worldview, and they believe that the one sure way to get to paradise is to die killing the infidels. And ladies and gentlemen, that's you and me. And the amazing thing is, you know, prior to the repeal of the McCarran Immigration Act back in 1965, we had 50,000 Muslims, and, you know, we had, you know, just a handful of mosques. Now we've got over 2,000 mosques. It's estimated somewhere between 4 and 9 million. The figure is usually 7 million Muslims living in America, and at least over a million and a half of them go to these radical mosques where they are indoctrinated in this hatred of America, hatred of the infidels. And the clerics are there, all 80% of them funded by Saudi Arabia, are preaching hatred of America and hatred of Israel. Why
yes,
would any...
Yes, they are. And this has mushroomed. This has proliferated at an increasing rate just in very recent years. There is in Loudoun County, Virginia, of which Leesburg is the county seat, a beautiful county in northwestern Virginia on the Potomac. There is now in that county a Muslim university completely funded and operated by the Saudis. And in that school, they are taught hate.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. And right now, I just want to point out that we are facing a terrible, terrible threat in America today. We carry a number of books, and if you'd like to get our catalog, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and you'll get a reference to the book Islamic Invasion by certainly Dr. Robert Morey, Bin Laden, the man who declared war against America, American Jihad by Stephen Emerson. So many books you're not going to get through other channels. A great new book, The War on Freedom, going into the background of what really happened on September 11th and how that is being used to take away not the freedom of the Muslim radicals in this country, but the freedom of the average American citizen. And The War on Freedom, an excellent, excellent book. Let me also mention, if you have children in government schools, why you need to get a phonopoly set for them so they can learn to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Most of these programs are $300 or $400. This one is actually $139.95. And if you will play this game, and it's a game played like Monopoly, play the game with the children, why they'll, in 16 to 20 hours, they'll begin to think and read and pronounce words phonetically. It's amazing. You can begin to reprogram their minds and then do all the harm that's been done in the government schools. And then we carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, where we can take children from grammar school all the way through high school graduation for $199.95. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. Ask for Phonopoly. If you'd like more information, give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a packet of information on the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum along with my interview with Dr. Robinson. But call right now. A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Colonel Tom McKinney, and he's a retired Marine Corps officer. And of course, we're talking about his pamphlet, which is up available on his website, or you can get directly from Word for Living Ministries, and it's called Blood on the Sword, and it's really going into the background of the Muslim religion, which is not being taught to us, or we're being lied to by so much of the media. Occasionally you will get the truth. There was a wonderful program on CBS, I've commented before, but they were interviewing four 18-year-old Muslim girls, you know, everything covered but their face, very young and very attractive, and all of them supported the suicide bombings in Israel. In fact, one of them said, "Why, you know, if I were to go into a naval base and blow myself up, I would go immediately to paradise." And she said this almost happily. And then somebody pointed out to her later that that she was basically living in the United States, raised in the United States, and talking about blowing up a naval base in America, and people might interpret that she was anti-American. So she called 60 Minutes and said, "Well, I was really talking about, you know, an Israeli naval base." Well, how many naval bases does Israel have? So she knew exactly what she was saying, but of course they don't want to disturb the American people. Why? Because these Muslims, in my opinion, were brought in to this country, allowed to come in here, massive numbers of them, to create a multicultural society and undermine the very fabric of Western civilization here. And this is happening in Europe, where in many of the countries the Muslims are increasingly out reproducing the Europeans. In fact, it's said that 50 years from now, why Europe will be Muslim. And this is happening intentionally, and the Muslims know this. That's why they don't go along with all the birth control and one-child policy. They want as many children as they can, because they're quite willing to live here now. But when they're the majority, they will take power. And this is really all about power, isn't it, Colonel?
Yes, it is. And they refer to what you just described as peaceful jihad. To move in into another country, a non-Muslim country, in huge numbers, ever-increasing numbers, and then to have more babies than the non-Muslims are having, and in that way eventually just take over. They call it peaceful jihad.
And people cannot imagine that happening here, and yet there are some cities in the United States where Dearborn, Michigan, is my understanding, is basically a Muslim community now.
The second largest Iranian population, the city with the second largest Iranian population in the world, is Los Angeles, California.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Well,
after only Tehran, their capital city. There are more, in other words, there are more Iranians, not just Muslims, but Iranian Muslims, in Los Angeles than there are in any city in Iran except for the capital.
And of course, so much of this radical Islamic movement is being funded by the Saudis. Did you get at all into that in your study?
No, I didn't. It's really a thematic and doctrinal with historical background, but not as contemporary, not contemporary enough to deal with the fact that the Saudis are the principal source of the money for all this. They are. And you mentioned, we're talking about peaceful jihad. There are laws in England now that forbid the ringing of church bells at certain hours of the day because it will disturb the Muslims.
Well, we certainly wouldn't want to have
it. And I never thought I'd find myself in agreement with Brigitte Bardot, but she has been convicted twice in recent years of hate crimes for speaking against Islam in France. And the most recent time, all she did was say it's a terrible thing. She thinks it's a terrible thing that there are more mosques in France now than there are churches. And she's not entitled to her opinion there. She was convicted and fined heavily for committing a hate crime, simply stating her opinion.
And I think we're going to find the same sort of laws being passed here in the United States, where it will be illegal to say that homosexuality is wrong just because the Bible says.
Oh, goodness.
Already we're talking about hate crimes against Muslims, and I certainly can't see any justification for violence against Muslims, you know, as long as they're not doing it just is not justified in our society. But, of course, nobody seems to be very worried about violence against Christians.
No.
Anti-Christian prejudice, anti-Christian bias, and yet nothing at all is said. Our churches are silent, and that is my concern, that the church refuse. I mean, they become the most wimpy, acceptors, and no matter what happens, we're not going to do anything, we're not obligated to do anything. And this is how, of course, Christian persecution begins increasingly to become more prominent, and the church leaders refuse to speak out and against this sort of thing. And yet, time after time, we see with the Supreme Court and the ACLU and these other organizations trying to remove the Ten Commandments there from the courthouse lawn in Alabama. And well, the Supreme Court's going to have to decide. And no, I mean, the First Amendment is very, very clear. Congress will make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And of course, the Supreme Court opens its prayer sessions every single day when the choir comes in and says, God bless the United States and this Augustus Court or something like that.
Yeah.
So they open with prayer, but we can't have it mentioned in school, and people have to ask why, and I will tell you why. Because the Supreme Court justices hate Christianity, at least the majority of them do, and they want to destroy any understanding of Christianity in our school children so they can control the minds of the next generation. They have Congress opens with a prayer, the Senate opens with a prayer, but we can't have it in public schools. What's the difference? Why they want the minds and souls of our kids. And where is the church speaking out? I mean, I believe every minister should say, get your children out of government schools. We'll make our church a school here, and we'll bring them up according to the law. And I believe we have an awful lot of ministers who are going to have an awful lot to answer for when they stand before the gates of heaven.
They are simply demonstrating a massive lack of courage and conviction. And you're right, they will have a lot to answer for.
But I think the parents will, too, because, of course, they're allowing their children to stay in the government schools where they're designed to destroy their belief in God.
That's true.
And in family and country.
That is true. And the lack of courageous leadership in the church is one of the most distressing problems of the day to me. It's difficult to find a pastor who will speak out against anything except intolerance.
Right.
And you, once in a while, when an organized group of Christians like the Southern Baptist Convention comes forth with a public policy, which is simply something about which there could be no discussion if you believe the Bible, then they are vilified, jumped upon, attacked, assaulted by not only the world and the establishment media, but by all the liberal, quote, churchmen and theologians, quote, who don't believe anything anyway.
Well, I think that we just have to have ministers who are going to stand on the Bible and totally ignore what the world says about them. And that's
there,
what
there,
they need.
There is a very admirable Christian radio network, which I won't name, but they refused to speak out against abortion. They refused to speak out against sodomy. And what they say, their slogan is, we want to keep the main thing the main thing, speaking of the doctrine of salvation. But what they're really doing is keeping the main thing the only thing, which is very different. And they can't seem to see that. I think if we are going to be true to the Christian faith as expressed in the Bible, then I don't see how we can be silent when outrages are practiced and made a part of our culture.
Well, our guest is Colonel Tom McKinney. Our telephone number here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you agree, if you disagree, give us a call, and we'd love to get your thoughts on this. And, of course, we really started out talking about Colonel McKinney's essay, which is up. It's a small pamphlet. It's up on his webpage. It's called Blood on the Sword, and it really goes into going into the fact that the Islamic religion as such, not that every person who's a Muslim is violent, but the Islamic religion really preaches violence against non-believers. And, you know, of course, people will say, well, but there are some phrases in the Quran where Muhammad says that we all also get along together. But then there are so many other contradictory terms really that are really advocating violence, aren't there?
Yes. Oh, and it might be interesting to your listeners to know how the Quran came to be.
Why don't you cover that for us?
And I think it would be instructive also to explain the nature of the Islamic God, because that will then explain most of what they do. But the Quran is supposedly the spoken utterances of Muhammad. Now, Muhammad was, like all the rest of the tribal Arab groups in Arabia in those days, in the 7th century, he worshipped his tribal pagan gods. There were many gods and a few goddesses worshipped by the Arabian tribal groups, and each one had his own favorite. And his favorite was a moon god named Allah. And he decided that there should only be worship for Allah and not for all these other pagan gods. And so he took this position publicly and at first suffered great reverses and was driven away from Mecca and from Medina and fled. And he gathered more and more warriors and acquired more and more strength and then began to fight back and began to win. And as he won battles over tribal groups, he forced them to embrace the worship of his tribal god, Allah. And that was the origin of Islam. And after his death, his utterances, which had been written down, were gathered together and assembled into what we know today as the Quran. Now, Muhammad himself was illiterate. He could neither read nor write. And he had been exposed to the religion of the Jew. He had been exposed to the Christian teachings and had decided to reject both. But he remembered some parts of what he had heard from the Bible, but he didn't remember them accurately. And he would go into a trance and speak under the in the trance state, and then his scribes would simply write down what he said. And after he died, this went on for years, after he died, these writings, these sayings, these utterances of Muhammad's were gathered together and somewhat codified into chapters, which they call surahs, and bound up into what we know today as the Quran. Now, they have a second holy book called the Haditha, which is made up of other sayings attributed to Muhammad by early Muslim scholars, who said Muhammad said these things to them and they had written them down.
All right, we're going to get back to this in just a moment with Colonel Tom McKinney. But right now, of course, we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported. And if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do it. We do 5 hours every day. And, of course, by radio, by Internet, by shortwave, by satellite, we do have an outreach. But, of course, it's all rather expensive. And so if you'd like to become part of our family, part of our team, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford. But we'll get our 4 best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do as we, of course, begin to reach out across America, trying to bring people the truth about what's really going on, because there is censorship in America. The CIA's had their agents here in this country for years, controlling the news media. Now, if you doubt that, we have a list of the CIA operatives here. It's in a book called Regicide. The information comes from Robert Crowley, who was the director or assistant or deputy director of covert operations for the CIA. And this was the list that he left of people who were getting the intelligence journal from all branches of intelligence, people that the CIA felt they could count on. And he left that with Mr. Gregory Douglas. And after Mr. Crowley died, why, it's published in the book Regicide, the story of why the CIA arranged for the assassination of President Kennedy. Fascinating book. You're not going to find it at your local bookstore, but it's here in And so we are certainly getting the information out that the other side doesn't want to get out. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Call right now.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the PWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we've got Dale calling in from Santa Cruz. Dale, are you there? Dale? Oh, okay. Dale? Dale?
Yes, sir.
Okay, did you have a question or comment?
You know, I was just listening to your program, and I really appreciate both of you who commented that judgment is going to first begin in the house of God on these matters. And about ministers who do shun to declare the whole counsel of God. Paul spent 3 years with Ephesus, and at the end of the 3 years, when he got ready to leave, he called all the church elders together. And in Acts chapter 20, verse 26, he says, "I'm not guilty of the blood of any man, for I've not shunned to declare the whole counsel of God unto you." You know, so Paul felt this need to declare the whole counsel of God. And in Ezekiel chapter 33 and verse 6, it talks about the watchman being watchman over the flock, and about the sound of warning, the trumpet, and declaring that judgment's going to come. And so if you look up those, you know, I won't quote all that, but the bottom line is, Stan, I believe that judgment's not only going to begin in the house of God, it's going to begin in the pastor's and priest's office.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. What are your thoughts on that, Colonel?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And because of the position they hold, they're going to be held to a higher standard, I think, than the rest of us. Definitely responsible for what they do and what they don't do, what they say and what they do not say.
Well, I'm sure glad that they're going to be held to a higher standard than I am, because I would not want to be held to that high standard. And, you know, but isn't it strange that here you are, a retired Marine Corps lieutenant colonel, I'm a retired orthopedic surgeon, and we're talking about these things that a lot of people don't want to hear about, and they're certainly not hearing it in the churches, and yet they should be said. God is going to judge America. There's no question in my mind. If he's going to be consistent, he is going to have to, do to this country what he's done to every country that's ever turned against him. And the only thing that would save the country would be a mass repentance. And I don't see anybody out there really calling for that at all. I mean, certainly there are a few people that Campus Crusade for Christ, Bill Bright, has, you know, asked for people for fasting and prayer. But how many people are really involved? There's no impetus to it. People don't feel a sense of urgency, and yet they should.
Oh, yes. And, you know, the First Amendment was mentioned a little while ago. The day the First Amendment was ratified, the ratification was celebrated with a prolonged prayer meeting. So if the First Amendment prohibits prayer in government places, then those guys who ratified it and then rejoiced over it were confused.
Well, I really hate to say this, but I believe that these members of the Supreme Court know exactly what they did. They wanted to see what would happen, or they knew it would happen, when you took prayer and God out of our country. They knew that they were creating a secular country, and that's exactly what they wanted, because this has really always been a conspiracy against God. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning there in the Garden of Eden, and it's here right today, and it's working right in our Supreme Court. And they keep saying, gee, if we just get the Republicans in office, why, everything will be all right. They'll put in, they'll put in conservative judges. People never stop and think that seven of the current corrupt Supreme Court justices came from Republican presidents. Yeah. Now, a couple of Supreme Court
And the
Court
most
justices,
radical of the others were had the votes for confirmation votes of Republican senators.
Right, and not to say that we don't have a couple of pretty good Supreme Court justices who I applaud, but they're in a minority because the Republicans put them in a minority. And until we get out of this idea of thinking the way that they want us to think, we're going to continue going down the road to destruction.
Oh, yes.
But, of course, nobody ever wants to point that out. Oh, wouldn't it be terrible if we had Al Gore in there? If we had Al Gore in as president, we wouldn't be going to war in the Middle East because the Republicans would be objecting to it. And so I'm very, very concerned, and I hope you're concerned out there, whether you're Republican or Democrat. You're concerned that maybe we better stop and realize that both parties are going the same direction. And, of course, they're taking America to destruction. Well, of course, Colonel Lauer, you were, before we so rudely interrupted you, you were telling us,
talking about the origins of Islam,
right,
and the origin of the Quran. And incidentally, the Quran has a great many internal self-contradictions because Muhammad made these statements, and many of them, if not most, while in a trance state, over a period of many years. And his opinions thus expressed changed. Whether he was aware of that or not, I couldn't tell you. But in the earlier parts of the Quran, the older parts, the attitude toward the infidel is much more mild, much more benign. As you progress into the later parts, it becomes much more vehement and much more violent. And so there are outright contradictions. You know, we are accused of having contradictions to the Bible. I've been studying the Bible for 26 years, and I've never found one. But the Quran is full of them, and Islamic scholars will admit that. They don't have any justification for it that I'm aware of. But it's there, and poor Muhammad, I say poor Muhammad because he makes himself absurd in some places. He borrowed from the Bible in his utterances for the Quran, but he got it so terribly wrong at times. For example, in the Quran, a Samaritan helps the Israelites build the golden calf at the foot of Mount Sinai. And the Samaritans didn't exist as a people for another 1,000 years after that. And they were in a completely different part of the Middle East anyway. Also in the Quran, he has Pharaoh commanding Haman to build a tower like the Tower of Babel. And in this passage, he is confusing the Exodus with Genesis 11 and the Tower of Babel and the book of Esther. In the Quran, the Virgin Mary is a sister to Moses and Aaron, an error not only of genealogy, but about 1,500 years of chronology. And when the Islamic scholars, the Quranic scholars, are confronted with these things, they say, well, the problem is not with the Quran, it's that the Christians and the Jews have let errors creep into the Bible, and so we are, the Quran is right and they're wrong.
Well, it's pretty hard, if you're a Quranic scholar to admit that the Bible upon, or the Quran, which you base your faith is full of mistakes, but it obviously is.
Yes, it is. And I think it's instructive for us to know the nature of Allah, because this really is the wellspring from which all of the doctrinal beliefs that are so different flow.
And now, who is Allah?
Allah is a pagan god. That was his name before Islam was founded, and as I think we said before, he was the tribal god of Muhammad's tribe, and Allah was a moon god, and he was worshipped in Mecca, in that little cubical building, And but inside that was not only a statue or an image of Allah, but also 20 or 30 other pagan gods and goddesses were worshipped inside that little building. And the Islam had its beginnings when Muhammad decided that his God would be everybody's God, and they would no longer be allowed to worship all those the multitude of other pagan gods. They would have to worship only his. And so liberal theologians look upon this as the birth of monotheism, but it really isn't. You know, monotheism began with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob long before. But that's how Islam had its beginnings. And the nature of this God is so terribly important, because George W. Bush and others like him, Colin Powell and the other Islam apologists in our leadership, would have us to believe that Allah is just another name for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we worship the same God as the Muslims do, just by a different name. Nothing could possibly be farther from the truth, because we know that the very essence of the true God is love. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. This is a completely foreign concept to a Muslim. Their God, Allah, is a God you cannot approach. You can't love him. And if I forget to come back to this, help me to remember about loving him. That's one of the worst religious crimes you can commit in Islamic thought. And he is a God that you try to appease and hope that someday you'll be acceptable to him. A personal relationship with him is a completely foreign concept to a Muslim, and to love him, to say that you love God, is a capital offense in most Islamic countries, because to them, to love Allah is unthinkable. That would be presumptuous. In fact, it would be something on the order of cosmic incest. And so it's just an unthinkable thing. You know, they rend their garments and tear their hair if you talk about loving God, because it's unthinkable. And a woman who was who became a Christian in very recent years in an Islamic country made a statement privately that everything was so different since she had become a Christian, because now she loves God, and she meant it, of course. And for that, she was put to death, because to them, that's unthinkable, because the absolutely different nature of Allah, of their God, and our God. Well, private, personal prayer, which is the very breath of life for a Christian, is unthinkable to them. That would be like, what would it be like? You know, in French and Spanish, they have the familiar forms and the formal forms, vous and tu, and to use the familiar form to your parents in traditional families would get your face slapped. And that's a mild analogy, an inadequate analogy.
Well, we're going to have to interrupt you there. It's been a fascinating hour. Colonel, thank you so very, very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you as a guest here.
Thank you. Dr. Monty.
God bless you. Bye-bye. That was Colonel Tom McKinney. I hope you appreciated his discussion. I certainly always learn from him. I'm proud to call him a friend. So please pray for America. Pray for certainly revival, and pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you.